Now, you all know the title of this particular meeting, and as such, we have no speakers except you. There is a microphone here in the center aisle, and I'm going to step down here in front of the podium and loosen this one as well. But we need to hear examples of humor and laughter that's come into your life as a result of the program. But on a little bit of a serious note, I'd like to read something from a book that you may recognize. And for those of you that may be carrying it with you, I'm going to read from page 73. In the newspaper this morning, I read this prayer, quoted from the window of a local pet shop. Quote, "Dear God, please help me be the person my dog thinks I am." This has been my prayer for the day, and it has kept me smiling. With my dog, I'm very much the person I want to be, and when I'm not, my dog doesn't seem to hold it against me. This joking prayer has helped me take myself less seriously and be more honest about my own behavior. And just for today, it's helped me feel the presence of my higher power. Laughter may not have made me a better person today, but it has made me better company for my dog. In my experience in a program, laughter and humor can go two directions. And it's up to me to make the choice. When I first began, and for a long time after I first began in this program, I used humor as a defense. I used laughter as a defense. And it's only been in the fairly recent past for me that it's just honest, good fun to me, that just absolutely cleans my soul and lets my heart shine. And of course, that's the kind of laughter and humor that I want to come into my life today. And it's you and people like you that have helped me along the road to enable me to do it. Now, I know you all have countless experiences similar to that. And I would really, really appreciate it if one by one you'd go to the mic and tell us about it. But if you would, please, because there are about 450 people in this room, if you would limit your presentations to the mic to maybe a couple of minutes or not more than that anyway, and we'll get on with it. Who would like to be the first? Look at that. Wonderful. Thank you.
My name is Jenny, and I'm from Massachusetts, and we're going to start down and dirty. I've been around since the dark ages, so I've heard a lot of humor. Do you know, Howdy, why we Al-Anonics keep our eyes shut when we're having sex? We don't want to see the alcoholic have a good time.
Well, now you see what happens when you go too far. Go ahead. Who's at the mic? Go, next man.
Hello, my name is Keith.
Hi, Pete.
I do get the pleasure of anonymity. Oh. I noticed in an earlier session they had it turned around. It seems better to face as many as possible. I'm from Southern California. I've known since college the importance of humor. I was lucky enough to have a psychology teacher who frequently told his students, "So long as you can laugh at yourself, you will never go crazy. That I promise you. That I promise you." And while I've always remembered his words, I am not so consistent practicing them. Nearly 20 years ago, I was sleeping in my car, and I had learned many techniques of avoiding police, but on this particular night, I outsmarted myself, and I got awakened, and I roared at the cop, and so to show me who's boss, he gave me a ticket for sleeping in a red zone, and just a part of my car was dragging over, but anyway, I carried a huge resentment for years. I would say that even until I came to Al-Anon, it was still a factor, almost 11 years ago. And anyway, last night, having driven up here, I slept in my car again. And speaking of dogs, the first place I found to sleep, some dog was yapping across the way, and I suspect that if dogs, the owner is treated with respect, I'm trying to be the person, or at least I'm trying not to be the person that dog might imagine me to be. But I moved to another place, and there I found, just as I started to doze, I heard the sound, the piercing sound of a yapping poodle. And that really carries. So I had to move again. And as I started moving around, I started imagining being corralled by a cop again. And I thought, well, if Alan has taught me nothing else, if a cop awakes me, I will at least be polite to this cop. And for those of you who might be concerned about my welfare, one of my Southern California buddies, his wife couldn't come, so he's offered me a bed for tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Pete.
Marco from Phoenix, Arizona.
Mark.
Thursday night, Valley Stag, best men's Al-Anon meeting in the country. two hypothetical people, one's in AA and one's in Al-Anon. Barb's in Al-Anon and Bob's in AA. And one day Bob gets sick, and so Barb takes him to the hospital, and he was really sick. So a week later, Barb calls over to the hospital to see how he's doing. And they say, she calls, says, "How's Bob doing?" They say, "Oh, gosh, we're sorry to tell you, Bob has died and he's not coming home." And she says, "Oh," hangs up. Well, a week later, calls the hospital again, says, "I'm calling about my husband, Bob. When is he coming home?" They were a little concerned. They said, "I'm sorry, miss, but Bob has died. He's not coming home." Well, another week follows, and she calls again. Well, they were really concerned, and so they got a hold of a psychologist who got on the phone and said, "Ma'am, we've told you a couple of times now that Bob has died and he's not coming home. Why do you keep calling back?" She says, "I just love to hear it."
Oh, look at that. And the lights didn't even flicker.
Hi, my name is Jackie. And I had to get up when the lights went out. That's God telling me, and God has a sense of humor. It's funny, I was at one of the meeting, and half of the room was laughing. That day I wasn't having a very good day. But at work, upstairs, it's a room, and only one person really goes up there at a time to have a break. We have motion lights in that room, so the lights go off. So when you're in there, you kind of just kind of do this, right? So I'm in this meeting, and we're so quiet listening, you know, to our, everybody's quiet and still, and the lights go out, and I just kind of do this. So how everybody in the meeting was kind of laughing. It's like, every time I think about it, you know, it just makes me laugh. Even if I'm in a bad mood on the way home from work or whatever, you know, it just makes me laugh. So if somebody would flicker the lights, no, just kidding. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. I'm Lucille.
Hi, Lucille.
From Massachusetts. I'm a very grateful member of Al-Anon for many years. And I'm here to say that Al-Anon has taught me how to laugh. I didn't know how to laugh because I came from a very serious household. And when I joined Al-Anon, I still didn't know how to laugh until after about 5 years. My daughter had a surprise birthday party for me. And there was all my Al-Anon friends. and they made me laugh. I had so much fun that day. I still don't know how to tell a joke, so you're not going to hear a joke from me. But I know now how to listen and to enjoy the joke and to laugh. And I'm so appreciative of that. Thank you.
Thanks, Lucia.
I'm Charmaine. I'm from Monterey, California. During my first couple of months in Al-Anon, I went to a beginner's meeting, and the topic was the second step, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And I, of course, being new, had already looked at all the people and looked at what they were wearing and so on and so forth. And I had noticed this one lady that had beautiful jewelry and well-dressed and articulate, and she spoke up once and said, well, does that mean I'm crazy? And what I can remember is the whole room saying, yes, it does. And I'm thinking, I'm not crazy. I don't feel crazy, you know. I wonder why I'm here. A week or so later, I had been to a meeting, and I stayed out late talking with someone. And when I got home, all the doors were locked. I didn't lock them. You can guess who did. So I tried all the doors, and I said to myself, I'm resourceful. I can get in this house by myself. So I proceeded to get a ladder. I got up on the roof, and I proceeded to try to stretch myself over onto the balcony. And that's when that meeting came back to me.
Hi, my name's Linda. I'm from Texas. And I'm really nervous. I got to ask a question. How many of you know the one about, you know, the fried egg? Yeah. Well, my story is something like that. My husband and I one year decided we were going to plant a garden. No big deal. Except that I thought we ought to make the rows go this way. And he said we ought to make the rows go this way. Needless to say, we did plant it his way because he's the alcoholic and we don't want to fry the wrong egg. Well, in our group, we have a birthday night where the alcoholic celebrates his birthday and then the Al-Anon gets to talk too. Well, he had told me a couple of weeks before then that I had been watering the garden wrong. I was making the weeds grow faster than the plants. So that's what I told them when I got up behind the mic. That not only do I fry the wrong egg, I make the weeds grow faster than the plants. Thanks.
Thank you.
Hi, everybody. I'm Cheryl from the great state of Michigan. When I come to these conventions or things like this or the state conventions, my friends and I seem to spend an awful lot of time eating or figuring out when we're going to eat or what we're going to eat. I'm beginning to think that AFG stands for all food groups. Thank you.
My name is Lois, and I'm from the same great state of Michigan that Cheryl's from. Because I believe that service is our key to recovery, the great state of Michigan flew me on an airplane at the age of 59, my first airplane trip to Minneapolis for a regional service seminar. I was kind of afraid, but I turned it over to my higher power, and the flight was wonderful, and the pilot was standing there as they wheeled me off in my wheelchair, and I said, you know, this is my first flight. I said, it was awesome. I cried. He said, well, I did too. I said, now why would you cry? He said, it's my first flight too. Now I was in Minneapolis and I had to get back home in 2 days. When I got to the airport, I checked out all those pilots, and I looked for the oldest one I could find. another cute little story. When I was brand new, of course, I wanted that man sober. That's all I could say. And my sponsor, bless her heart, kept saying, Lois, this program's not about him, it's about you. And I kept saying, but if he just quit drinking, we'd be okay. She said, honey, why should he quit drinking and be miserable like you?
I'm Charlotte from the great state of Washington, Vancouver. Vancouver, Washington, USA. As a direct benefit of being in this program for a lot of years, my husband and I got to go to Austria in May and Italy. And in the course of being a tourist, we took buggy rides and gondola rides. And the buggy ride fellow turned around to tell us about these buildings. He couldn't focus his eyes. He couldn't look at us. He tried, but he couldn't find us. And so we kind of laughed about that during the afternoon. And when we got to Italy, and we got on in this gondola, and the gondolier, he spoke English, of course, but he wasn't talking to us. He was yelling and hollering at all the other gondoliers or boat drivers. He was just having these vigorous conversations with everybody he went by. Well, a lot of people just totally ignored him. He wouldn't answer him back. And after a while, we kind of figured that he's very belligerent. And after a little more time, we finally figured, well, he is probably nipping too. So we got through this, and it was a pleasant, but we didn't learn much from him. It was a pleasant ride. And so we were talking about this later. And Carl says, boy, we sure can find them, can't we? And I said, you bet, honey, you just stick with me. I collect them like flies.
Hi. Hi, my name's Armita. I'm from Moreno Valley, California.
Hi.
And I just want to tell you how grateful I am to be here. For the last 3 years, every time I go to an Al-Anon meeting and they would announce the convention, I kept saying, I'm going to come to Salt Lake City, and I'm here, and I'm just really grateful. But anyway, I just want to tell you a couple little short stories of how clueless I was about alcoholism. I had went to various counselors, marriage counselors, all sorts of counselors, and they all kept telling me that I was affected by alcoholism, and of course, it would go in one ear and out the other. They kept telling me I needed to get into Al-Anon, and again, it would go in one ear and out the other. Well, my husband, he was ordered by court to go to AA, and being the type of person I was, and I was going to change him and fix him and help him, I used to go to the AA meetings for him and get the little cards. And you know what? If anybody would have told me that, you know, I was enabling him or I wasn't helping Armita, I wouldn't believe him. I really thought what I was doing was the right thing. And there was, I think, one time we all went as a family to the AA meeting, and they came up to me and they gave me the big blue book. You know, my sponsor laughed because she told me that they thought I was the alcoholic. Of course, I didn't. But anyway, another little short story. At the time when I still wasn't listening and trying to do it myself, there was one time we had a big argument. It was New Year's Eve, and I decided to be very dramatic, and I was on a big pity party and decided to go driving around, and I saw this Catholic church, and I figured I'd go in there and maybe somebody would come there and talk to me. And the Mass was over, and I walked in there, and there was very few people there. It was just like maybe one or two hanging around, and then the priest came out, and I thought, oh, he's going to come and talk to me. He's going to say, oh, this poor lady, she looks so sad and everything. And he calls me up. He tells me hi. He introduced himself. He asked me what my name was. I told him my name was Armita, and he says, would you do me a favor and vacuum up here? And so I ended up God has a sense of humor, you know. And I said, oh, okay, being the type of person I was. So I cleaned all, I dusted and I vacuumed. And I thought, I better go home and I better listen to these counselors and get into a 12-step program. So now I'm here, 6 years.
My name is Stacy and I'm from San Diego, California. I've learned a lot in Al-Anon. Al-Anon gave me my life back, and it raised it to a level I don't think anything could. So I'm here for life, and I'm happy about it. And one of the things that Al-Anon has given me was humor, even though I tend to laugh a lot and at pretty much anything. Al-Anon taught me to laugh at things that maybe weren't even funny sometimes, just because it helped me get through things. And I think life is absurd anyway. Life is very absurd, and just when you think you have it figured out, it gets a little more absurd. So I think one of the things that concern me the most today are road rage. Road rage is very scary, but it's also very absurd. And if you look at it right, you can see the absurdity in it, you can find the humor in it. And you know, even if I work my program really, really hard, there's some things that really bother me. And one of those things is to see people going down the road, cutting people off, and tailing people, not using their turn signal, or using their car phone and going all over the road while they're don't you hate that? Don't you hate that? Or these men that... these men that fix their hair in the mirror. You know what? I could not believe this. The other day I was going down the road and I saw a guy shaving. And it upset me so bad, I almost stuck my mascara wand in my eye. But I've learned to deal with road rage the same way I learned to deal with alcoholics in my life. I know that if there's a person on the road mad enough and driving crazy enough, I treat them like the alcoholic. They're always right. You can't argue with them. So just get in the middle lane, go back a little bit, maybe 10 miles less, and just laugh at them because they're very funny. Thank you.
Hi, my name is David. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon from Huntington Beach. I remember the first time that I shared in an Al-Anon meeting. It was my third meeting. I walked in, I sat down, I blurted out everything that was going on. And the first thought that came into my mind when I shut my mouth was, I want my sense of humor back. You know, I used to really enjoy that about myself, and for some reason I hadn't laughed for a very, very long time. And I was... one of the things that really attracted me to these rooms was that there were people in here laughing, talking about things that I had been deeply ashamed of and laughing. And I tried not to take it personally, but... there's a group of folks where I go to meetings of members of AA and members of Al-Anon, and we all kind of hang out together. And it often happens that the members of AA will break into guffaws over something, and then they will look at each other and say, well, we are not a glum lot. And then they look over at us. As if to say, but you are. And I have never found that to be so. I know that when I was very new in the program, I was in one of those gift shops, those 12-step gift shops, and I was trying to get a present for my sponsor. The woman who was helping me had told me that she had, you know, some years of sobriety that she was very proud of, and when I was explaining to her what I wanted, and she asked about my sponsor. She said, how much sobriety does he have? And I said, well, it's Al-Anon. And she said, oh. Oh, and then a light bulb clearly went on over her head, and she said, well, I've got this book, it's humorous sharings, you know, I think it'd be just perfect for you, because from what I hear, you people need to laugh more. And I tried to let that go for a while, but I had to pick it back up again, and I did say, you know, we really do laugh a lot. Not just at you guys. And that the truth of it is that the people that we laugh at most are ourselves. And it's really hard to be angry and laugh at the same time. I have one quick story. About the time that I got into this program, I put my son, who was then 7 or 8, into Alateen, and he went ahead and got some program despite my best efforts, and he was going to his meetings, and I guess he was hearing some things there, and there was one time when he had c- committed some heinous act. I don't know what it was at this point. And it was something to do with, you know, not doing his schoolwork or something like that. And I was really, really, really upset because it was reflecting on me. And I lost my temper. We were driving in the car, and I was yelling at him. And I was pounding on the steering wheel, and I was telling him why it was wrong that this 8-year-old, you know, was doing it all wrong. And he waited until I, you know, stopped for breath, which I should not have done. And he said to me, "Dad, you're hungry." "You're angry." "You're lonely." "And you're making me tired."
Before our next speaker starts, the people in the back are having a little difficulty hearing. Would you be sure and get up close to the microphone, please?
I'm Alice. I'm from Vancouver, Washington, original from Holland. The reason I share my home country with you is the way I came in this country, and I want to share that with you. I couldn't speak a word of English when I came here. My husband has been in Australia before I met him, and so he had learned to speak the Australian English with an accent. Anyway, we met shortly. He came from that country, and we got married, and he just wanted to immigrate to the United States. And he learned me to speak a few words of English so I could say hello to his brother that had become been to the United States 4 years before we came here. I have never met my brother-in-law, and I never met my sister-in-law. And so he learned me a couple of words in English. You know how we trust alcoholics? I did completely. I trusted my alcoholic before I trusted God. And so I never ask him what he teaches me in English. So we went to L.A. in California, where we lived for 12 years. Anyway, we came from the plane, and that was my brother-in-law and my sister-in-law. And my sister-in-law is strict Mormon. You never see her hear a wrong word coming out of her mouth. And I scared 11 daylights out of her. I walked up to my brother-in-law and put my arms around him, and I gave him a big hug, and I said, "How are you, fucking brother-in-law?"
Lights.
That was my welcome in the United States. My sister-in-law, I scared her. Her eyes got big as saucers. And she walked about a couple of passes away from me and told me later on she was very scared of me. See, my alcoholic husband, you know what they do. He got the biggest kick out of it. And he asked me later on, "Why you never asked me?" And I said, "Because I trusted you." And you know, I lost trust in alcoholism, not in the alcoholic, but I had to learn that again in Al-Anon. Thank you.
Hi, my name's John. I'm a grateful recovering Al-Anonic. Happen to be from Phoenix, Arizona. God love you. If you get a chance to meet and talk with Marco, he's a savior. He's a very spiritual being. God love you, Marco. In fact, this takes a lot from me because until this program, I never told a joke in front of people because I was too insecure. So here we go. That's your fault. Okay. It's sort of a story that I've sort of adapted. If you're from France, sorry. For you see, there was this alcoholic family, and the king had his time with it. And he just said, that's it, execution. They're out of here. So the three members of the family, the alcoholic, the Alateen, and the Alanonic, went before the executioner. Choice of death, guillotine. So Alateen was first, steps up there. Executioner says, do you have any last words for the king? Well, sure I do. It's all the Alanonic's fault. He went into my bedroom, looked through all my things. He tried to control when I got home at night. He tried to check out my friends, where I had been. It's all his fault. He's the cause of my problems. King said, yeah, whatever. Head on the block. Executioner pulls the rope. Blade stops a half inch off the back of the neck. A miracle. Executioner pulls him out of there. It's a miracle. You're set free. Alanonic sort of goes to the family and goes on his way. Next up, the alcoholic. Alcoholic looks at the king and says, you know, it's all his fault. It's the Alanonic's fault. If he hadn't been out there looking for me in every bar, hadn't been pouring out my alcohol, hadn't been checking out who my friends are or where I was, nothing would have happened. We would have been fine, but it's all his fault. It's all the Alanonic's fault. King says, whatever, head on the block. Pull the rope, blade, stops a half inch again off the back of the neck. You're free. It's a miracle. Alcoholic gets up and says, see ya. Out the door. Grateful Alanonic steps up to the king and says, you know, this whole thing would work a lot better if you take the knot out of the rope.
Hi, I'm Cal, and I'm from Canada. I get to be first. We're known to be reserved in Canada, so I'll see if I can change that. I still have a control issue. That first joke you heard about the alcoholic not smiling. When my husband got, just around the time he got to AA, I was pretty much the martyr, and that was going to be the state of my life. I was a good little Catholic girl. You could get divorced, but I couldn't, so I was going to cook and clean and have sex, but not enjoy it. So I think that's where that joke started. And of course, took me a while to get into Al-Anon, and even after I was in for a while, it took me a while to... I was still tiptoeing through the tulips and pussyfooting around and not wanting to upset the alcoholic, that kind of thing. So, but it made me think of this little story. Alcoholic goes to the doctor for his checkup. Doctor checks him over. Sorry, you're in bad shape. You're going to die tomorrow. Oh my God, that can't be true. No, I have to have another opinion. Okay, go across the hall. Go to the other doctor. Same story. You're going to die tomorrow. Goes home, tells his Al-Anon wife. Gonna die tomorrow. I said, oh my God, what are you gonna do? And he said, well, we're gonna go out for dinner. He said, it's gonna be the best dinner. I don't care if it costs us $300, caviar, steak, best wine, the works. And then we're gonna dance. We're gonna dance all night. Then we're gonna come home and have wild, wild sex. I said, easy for you to say, you don't have to get up in the morning.
I'm Vivian, and I'm from Canada, too. One of the things I've learned since I've come into Al-Anon is about choices. And this is a little story that my husband told at his AA meeting. It was an open meeting. Am I not talking in here? Thank you. It was an open meeting, and he shared this story. And it goes something like this. This fellow died. And he goes up to heaven, and... Heaven says, no, I'm sorry, you can't stay here, you have to go down. He thought, well, I've been a pretty bad fellow, so I guess I have to go down. So he goes down, and there's a gorgeous fellow standing there, and he meets him, and he says, well, you know, we have choices now. You just don't go to burning hell. And he says, okay, so what's my choices? And he said, well, you have three, and I'll show them to you. So he opens up this first door, and everybody's in this huge room, much like this, and they're all standing on their head on this hardwood floor. And the guy says, I don't think this is for me. What's my other choice? So goes to the second door, and they're all standing on their head on a cement floor. And this is eternity, folks, you know? You know, I don't think I like this. Let me see the third one. You know, I think that'll be for me. So before he even opens up the door, there's this horrible stench, you know? And this guy opens up the door, and the other fellow looks in, and there's everybody. They're standing around, and they've got coffee, and they're talking. Well, I'm kind of used to this, only they're all standing in shit right up to here. Right up to here. And he said, well, if I had my druthers, you know, I think I could handle this. So he goes in, the door shuts, and this big voice says, okay, coffee break's over. Everybody back on their head.
Good morning. My name is Coy, and I'm from Killeen, Texas. I also have a very unusual name, and when Howdy said about what he did, I thought, well, I have to tell you the story about my name. I teach English as a second language, and the first time that I went to Japan to live and teach, I did not speak the language at all. And on the first day that I was there, I wanted to get one of those name stamps with my name in Japanese. And so some friends and I were walking down the street of Kobe, and we were talking about this when we passed a name stamp shop. And a man stopped us on the street and said that he would help me to get my name written in Japanese, that he had been a translator for Woodrow Wilson. So I thought this would be a great person to choose my name. And so he said that Koi means thick, like something that's too strong. Well, I didn't want to be named thick. Then he said the other name was that meant some kind of fish that swims up the stream, and I didn't want to be named some fish. And so he said, well, there's another Koi that means love. I said, well, that'll be a good name. So we went into the shop and ordered the name stamp. The next week I went back to get it, and then I wanted to go register it in a bank so I could open a banking account. So I did, and they were in rows at the bank that the first people were the tellers, and each row was a little more important until they went clear to the back of the room where the president of the bank would be. And so the little girl took my name stamp, and she looked at it, and she went, died laughing. And I didn't know what was wrong. I thought, something's wrong with her. She doesn't read Japanese. So she showed it to the next person, and that girl went, it went through the whole layers of the bank. Must have been 50 or 100 people working there. Well, when I got home, since I didn't read Japanese, I took a Japanese dictionary, and it has over 50,000 characters in it. And since I didn't read it, I had to go through it one by one to find my name. And sure enough, Koi is there. Love. Intercourse.
Hi, everybody. My name is Roberta. I'm a very grateful member of Al-Anon.
I hail from Griffith, Indiana, and I'm wondering, what in the world am I doing here now?
First, I want to say to Alice, despite your greeting to Americans, when you got to the States, keep coming back. AA, I understand, is an equal opportunity fellowship. They'll let any old drunk in. But you know, to get into Al-Anon, you have to know somebody. I do remember my second Al-Anon meeting. The first one, I got there late because I had to figure out an excuse how to get out of the house. But the second one, I got there on time, and I saw these two ladies standing. One had been at the first meeting, the other one I didn't know, and they were talking and laughing, and I just knew that that second lady must not have an alcoholic at home, because there wasn't anything funny. She must have just been giving the other lady a ride. Now I know today she had a real live alcoholic at home.
But humor has been such a recovery for me. I grew up in a house with a lot of humor, and I know I had lost all of that. And it's been running with the people in the fellowship that have brought it back to me, especially service. I sponsor, service sponsor for a lady who's nuts. And she's not afraid to try anything. So 2 weeks ago, in front of our state convention, you found six of the people from my home group dressed up as the village people. I was the motorcycle cop, only, you know, when you can't put it all together the way you want it, you make it up. I look more like Barney Fife. My sponsor made me a badge that said Al-Anon Police to put right on my hat. We called ourselves the Village Nuts. And then the first speaker of the weekend told us that nuts mean not using the steps. But I, being a person of extremes, I take this family disease concept to the extreme. I was having a little problem with my car. I was driving along, it was functioning just fine, but when you didn't expect it to, it would just die. It wouldn't make any noise, it just quit running, kind of like my alcoholic. And it would do that, and then it would get started again and be going along, and then it would just die, and I never knew when I could depend on it or not. And we took it into the shop three different times looking for a diagnosis on this car, and finally the call came from the mechanic. My husband took the call, I was standing in the kitchen, and I heard him saying, oh, no alcohol. Okay, we'll be down to pick it up. And it kind of reminded me of the phone call from the police, you know, when you have to go bail them out. So on the way to pick up the car, he's explaining to me that what I have is a vehicle that doesn't process alcohol like normal vehicles do. I have an alcoholic car. I live in a county in which we have a high problem with emissions. We're just south of Chicago. And alcohol burns cleaner than the other gasolines. It took me over a week to search every gas station in all the towns in my area till I finally found one that didn't have alcohol in it. I didn't know it was so hard. But I have an alcoholic car, and it can't. Anytime I slip up, and we've made a trip to Missouri, and on the way back stop and got gas with, I didn't know, but alcohol in it, and by the time we got home, the car wasn't running anymore. So it just proves, you know, they're just one drink away from them. But even my car, it's a family disease.
Union, Iowa. 4 years ago, I was about to marry the second alcoholic. This one was well into recovery, however. We decided that we were going to do a lot of painting, and rather than in his house, because that's where we were going to live. And we decided, you know, we could do it ourselves. No use hiring somebody, you know, having to pay somebody. So he was asking me a lot of questions, and I couldn't understand why he was asking me these questions, you know, how to put the masking tape around the windows and the woodwork and things. And so it took about 4 days to get everything done. And we were sitting down admiring what we had completed. And he said, "Boy, I'm sure glad you knew how to do all this stuff." And I looked at him and I said, "What do you mean?" I said, "I've never painted a thing in my life." And we got a good laugh out of it, but it's a true story, so thanks.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ursula. My hometown is Davos in Switzerland. I would like to begin and say, if it wasn't for the grace of God, I would not be standing here right now. And it was right after the war, in times of recession, there was an employee of the government, and he came to the little mountain village up in the Alps, and he came and he knocked at the door, and the farmer's wife opened the door, and he says, "Well, hello, lady. I've come to check on your chickens. They really look very well. Well, what do you feed those chickens?" And then she says, "Well, they get some corn and some rice and some grain." And then he looked at her and he says, "I'm so very sorry, but, you know, I have to punish you for this because, you know, this is not allowed in these times. So I have to charge you $3 per chicken." So as he leaves, she phones her neighbor, and she says, "For Pete's sake, Betty, don't tell the employee what you're feeding your chickens." And she told her what happened to her. So knock, knock, knock. The man comes and he says, "Well, hello, lady. Wonderful chickens you've got here. Well, what do you feed those chickens?" And she says, "Well, I don't feed them anything. I give them each $3 a day, and then they can go and eat wherever they want."
I'm Richard from Glendale, California. All right. This Al-Anon person got too close to the cage at the zoo, and this gorilla grabs her and starts shaking her and banging her against the bars, and the police finally get her apart, and they take her to the hospital. 3 days later, she wakes up, and one of her Al-Anon friends said, "How do you feel?" She says, "I feel terrible. Yeah, that gorilla hasn't called or written or anything." Well, anyhow, Winnie Eddy used to tell about, she had this big Lincoln. She's one of us. She went before us in Al-Anon. I learned a lot from her. She had this big Lincoln, and she always liked to get in the fast lane, and somebody, she told a story about somebody getting in front of her and then slowing down. So she was going to show them. She got in front of them and slowed down. And this went on for about 4 or 5 miles, and the guy she was playing tag with got off, and she was 2 miles past her exit. One additional, when I was having breakfast with somebody that I sponsored, and I kept telling him, "Keep it one day at a time and do what's in front of you." And, he had this piece of toast in his hand, and he kept telling me about all the terrible things that had happened. And finally he gave me a break. He said, "What do you think I should do?" And I said, "Well, why don't you eat the toast?"
Hi, my name's Kim, and I'm from Boulder, Colorado. I originally hail from Nebraska, where having a green lawn is like the best thing that you can have. And I was taught at a very early age that that was my job. And so I learned how to do it very well. But my mother never mowed the lawn because she said, if a woman was seen mowing the lawn, she must be a widow. So after that, I promised myself when I got married that I would never mow the lawn because I didn't want to look like a widow. So I have a husband, and he's my second husband, and I haven't found the third one yet. And he works out a lot, and I don't. So when I can't stand it anymore, I write a note and say I'm going to go work out for 5 hours, like he does. And I just couldn't stand the lawn. It had clover everywhere and weeds, and we don't have a lot of lawn, and we live in the mountains, well, by the mountains. And so we have a lot of rock and about 1,200 square foot of lawn, which would not be hard to mow. But I can't be seen doing it. So I left, and when I came back, the lawn had been mowed, all except for the patch of clover. Now, clover to me is weeds, and clover to him is beautiful. Why would you mow clover? And I had to drive around the block and drive around the block before I could pull into the garage, because I realized I was insane, because the lawn had been mowed all except for the one piece, and I wasn't going to do it. Well, that evening, we have a great deer population right where I live, and so we don't grow food for us, we grow food for them. And there was a deer and two fawns nursing, eating the clover. That's my story.
Hi, everyone. My name is Audrey Alice Alexander. Three A's. First class. So there's no mistake as to where I'm supposed to be. And I am a widow from Bowden, Alberta, 1 hour north of Calgary, who mows her lawn. I'm sure all of you have stories about a funny thing happened on the way to the meeting. Well, five of us started Al-Anon together at Southside in Edmonton. And Fran lived the furthest south, and she had the car. And she'd pick Gloria up next, and she'd always say to us, be careful, this is an alcoholic car. Because there was a 6-inch piece of 2x4 holding up the passenger seat, just behind the passenger seat. And three of us had to get in the back and one in the front, and then we'd get to the meeting. So, don't kick that board out. Well, you could miss that board. So Gloria'd get in, and maybe she'd miss the board. So she'd get in. Then they'd pick me up. Hi, Audrey, be careful. And she brought us in new. But don't kick the board out. This is an alcoholic car, you know. It's got to have help. And I'd kick the board out. Well, we'd laugh. Put the board back in, and we'd go to pick up, who was next? Bev. And Bev would try to get in and not kick this board out. She'd kick the board out. And we'd be splitting by the time we got to this meeting. And yet we were all in desperate situations, late-stage alcoholism, violence, you name it. And we got to, and then Liz was last, and by the time we got to Liz, who was really, had the worst situation of the five of us, and she couldn't understand why we were all laughing. Because we just could not get into that car without kicking that board out. And this happened week after, and this was our goal every week, to get in that car without kicking it. I think we did it once maybe in 5 years, but that board always came out. And when we get to the meeting, everybody wondered, how come this gang's always laughing when they get to me? We could hardly stagger up those stairs for laughing about this board. I visit Hawaii the odd time, and I had been there before and attended a meeting in a real estate office on Maui, but I wasn't quite sure how to get there, so I phoned telephone answering. And any of you who work for TAS, take note. And this lady gives me a number, and I phone this number, and he says, this voice says, this is Alan's mortuary. And I said, I beg your pardon, and is this such and such a number? And she says, yes. And I said, what did you say? This is Alan's mortuary. And I said, well, I might be sick, but I'm not that sick. And then there's the one about after the meetings about, you know, my husband works in the oil business, and he did, and nobody drinks more than the people in the oil business. And the next girl would say, my husband works in construction, and nobody drinks more than the guys in construction. And we go through all the careers, and finally one gal said, my husband works for Revenue Canada, and nobody drinks more than people who work for the income tax department. And we figured we were sunk then. Thanks.
I'm Patsy from Vancouver, Washington.
Hi, Patsy.
And I had the pleasure of going to Ireland 3 years ago with our daughter, who was then 16. And our son went the year after that. And I've always loved, my father and grandparents are all born in Ireland. And my son came back with a wonderful ability. He has a good ability to do the Irish brogue, which I don't have, but he told us this joke. So in a not a very good Irish brogue, I will share that. Of course, it's about Pat and his wife, Maggie. And there was a special downtown on snails, which Maggie loved. So, Pat, would you be a dear and go get me some snails? Sure, Maggie, I'd be glad to. So off Pat went down and went into the shop, bought the bag of snails, and he was heading back with them. And lo and behold, his friend Mike met him on the street. Oh, Pat, haven't seen you for a long time. Come in, let me buy you a beer in the pub. So, no, got to get these snails home to Maggie.
Promised her I'd get him. Got to get him back to her. Oh, I haven't seen you for weeks. We haven't had a chance to visit. Come on in the pub. Well, come on in for one. Well, I guess that's all right. So he went in, he had one, then he had another one, then he had another one, then he had another one. Well, it was dark, and he was sloshed. And he thought, oh boy, I better get these snails home to Maggie. She's gonna be mad. So he gets home and he drags himself up the steps, one at a time. And he's fumbling around to get his teeth out, and he has his bag of snails, and he hears Maggie on the other side of the door, ready to open the door, and he dropped the snails all over the porch. And Maggie opens the door, and she's madder than fire. And he goes, out of desperation, he goes, come on, fellas, we're almost home.
Hi, I'm Chris. I'm a grateful Al-Anon. And I'm from San Francisco, California. My home group is the Tuesday Teddy Bear Group, and immediately after my meeting is an AA meeting. And we often take the 15 minutes between meetings and chat a little bit while we're moving out and they're moving in. And I pulled one of them aside and said, you know, come on, I know you guys tell jokes about us. Just, you know, come on, tell me one, tell me. He said, no, we don't tell jokes about you. We just need to warm up the chairs after you leave. But it's okay, because I got him back. How many alcoholics does it take to change a light bulb? Two. One to hold the light bulb, one to drink till the room spins. How many Al-Anons does it take to change a light bulb? None. The Al-Anon detaches and says, screw yourself.
Hi, my name is Glenn, and I'm also from San Francisco. And I am missing a conference that takes place in San Francisco this weekend called Living Sober. It's a recovery conference for gays, lesbians, and bisexuals. And the Al-Anon participants do a musical that they perform that our people do so well. I went to one of the rehearsals because I have a sponsee who's in it, and so I wanted to see it because I was going to miss it. Anyway, I want to tell you the best line. I hope this goes over. There's this character who meets online. He goes on the computer and goes into chat rooms all the time, and he has never been to a face-to-face meeting. He only works, you know, does these online meetings, nothing else. And, you know, so something happens to his computer. He has a hard drive crash, you know. And he starts freaking out. He's, like, losing it. And so his friend, a program friend of his calls him, and he freaks because the phone rings, and he can't believe the phone is ringing because it's supposed to be tied up with the computer. You know? But anyway, but he's freaking out. You know, my hard drive crashed. I can't deal. Yeah, I can't deal. I can't deal. And the guy says, Andrew, calm down. Take a deep breath. Let's say the Serenity Prayer. And he goes, the Serenity Prayer? Are you nuts? I love that. And the other one that I want to tell you is a variation on the alcoholic goes to the doctor, finds out that he has a week to live, and then says, what do I do? And the doctor says, find yourself an Al-Anon. It'll feel like a lot longer.
My name is Rose, and I'm one of the few roses from Chicago without thorns. And I'm really very nervous. I'm shaking inside. I hope you can hear me. I have waited 23 years to come to this conference. I got into Al-Anon 23 years ago, and I wanted to come every time there was one. So that goes to show you everything comes to he who waits, if not in this life, in the next. And I'm very fortunate to find it in this life. Several years back, I was fortunate to be at the Illinois State Conference, and I had just separated 6 months previously. After being married for 18 years, And I used to always tell my alcoholic, I was so happy when I was single. I got to travel and I wasn't tied down and everything. I said, and since I married you, I have never traveled. So I went to the first day conference and was in the only car that broke down with two women I hardly knew, so we had to check back into the motel. Well, of course, everywhere I go, I attract an alcoholic. The man who picked us up had a drinking problem, so he didn't show up for work the next day. So we had to sit there all day, and they thought the car would be fixed. Well, needless to say, the car wasn't fixed again, so we had to check back in. And as we checked in each time, they kept moving us towards the back of the motel. So the next day we checked out again. And we're sitting waiting and we hear the car isn't repaired yet. So we check back in again. I'm sorry, because I forgot to say, be careful what you ask for because you might get it. I wanted to travel again and I wanted to be single. So the next rooms they gave us were the very last rooms of this large motel in Springfield, Illinois, almost out of the place. And we got into the room, and I choose to call my higher power God. I said, God, I know I said I wanted to be single again, and I wanted to travel again, but across country, not across motel. And I have a joke I borrowed from Father Martin. I don't know if a lot of you know who he is. And I don't know if you'll think it's funny. And he spoke in Chicago one time, and he says, you know, we alcoholics, we do everything to excess. He said, so this alcoholic goes into a bar, and there's a sign that says, all you can drink for $10. So he takes out two tens, and he puts it on the bar, and he says, I'll take two. And thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Jason. Grateful member of the Al-Anon family groups and Alateen from Texas. Woo! There's a couple of us. The wonderful thing about internationals is that I get to tell all these wonderful stories that totally embarrass me, and y'all haven't heard them yet, so they're not old. One quick variation of the light bulb joke is, how many Al-Anons does it take to change a light bulb? None. The light bulb has to want to change. Okay. But one of the things with humor, using humor in my life, is two things. The God of my understanding has this really warped sense of humor. This is something you have to understand. So at the All Texas, way back like 6 years ago, I was on this panel to speak with all these three other Alateens, and I'm so excited. I'm just nervous. Everything, you know, I'm dressed up, which doesn't... almost never happens. I'm all dressed up and just shaking, and my one of my good friends, John, gets up there and says, yes, now I'd like to introduce my friend Jason. So he gets up there, you know, there everyone's clapping. I stand up, and John goes to give me this big old hug, and he whispers in my ear, your fly's unzipped. Yes, humility. The other thing is using humor in my program. One of the things that teenagers do not very well is drive at first, and they tend to wreck a lot. And during this one, I had turned 16. I'm going on this big trip to go see this basketball game. I'm all excited, and it's rainy, it's wet, and as God would have it, you know, there I got in this wreck, my car's totaled, I'm just scared to death, and the police officer's taking me back to his office so I can go call my parents and everything. And he says, so what are you going to tell your parents? I say, well, Mom, Dad, you know how, you know, I needed to change the oil and tires? You don't got to worry about that anymore. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Bert. I don't have any control issues.
Yes, my father was German, and my mother was just a wee bit Irish. And we had two children. One of them was turned out to be an evangelical preacher, and the other one turned out normal. That is a joke, though. It really is. A story me Irish mother used to like to tell about Father O'Rourke. On one Sunday morning, he went to the altar and prepared the altar for Mass, and then he walked down this long hallway, and opened up the door, and lo and behold, there was this dead jackass laying there. And he said, "Oh, my Lord, what am I going to do here? I know, I'll call Officer O'Malley." So he calls Officer O'Malley, and he says, "Officer O'Malley, there's a dead jackass out in front of the church. Could you come and remove him?" And he said, "Ah, but Father O'Rourke, isn't it the job of the church to bury the dead?" He said, "Yes, but it's the job of the church to inform the next of kin."
Hi, my name is Wendy. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon from Chicago, Illinois. Yay! I got a little joke and a little story. The joke is, why do Al-Anons keep their eyes shut when they're making love? So they can't see the AA having any fun. Okay, now for the story. A while back, a bunch of us went to the Illinois State Convention, and we were getting ready to leave, and my friend Donna and I were sharing a ride home from Peoria together. And we were just all happy and excited and pumped up because of the convention. We were having a good time. And we're walking out into the parking lot. And now I'm from Chicago. And in Chicago, parking garages are real tall. And you usually have to drive a long way to get to your space. And then you have to drive a long way to get out. Well, we're walking out to the parking lot. And I, of course, being good Al-Anon, wasn't paying a bit of attention to what I was doing and was all up in my head and talking about the weekend. And we're talking about this girl who had really long braids and how long did it take to do it. And we'd seen her there and she was getting into her truck. And we loaded up our stuff into my car. And I'm chattering away and talking about the weekend and Donna's just kind of nodding her head. And I go to leave while we're in this parking garage. And I'm starting to drive around, you know, like you do in Chicago. Well, this parking garage was only two floors. And after about 3 minutes, I suddenly realized that I'd seen the number two about three times. And I stopped and I looked and I said, "Donna, I think I'm driving around the same floor." She said, "Uh-huh." I said, "How long have I been doing that?" She said, "Oh, I stopped counting at seven." Well, by that point, I had to stop the car so I could laugh. And I said, "Well, at least nobody saw me." She said, "Oh, no. See that lady over there? She had to stop her car to laugh at you."
My name is Bobby Strange, and I'm a grateful recovering member of Al-Anon from Charleston, South Carolina. Hi. Every time I see a newcomer come into Al-Anon who is very tearful, I'm constantly reminded of what I was like when I first came here. I didn't do anything but cry the first few weeks. And when you laughed in my meeting, I wanted to choke you because there was nothing funny in my life to laugh at. It was when I had been in the Al-Anon program for a while and was working on my steps and really looking at some of my control issues, I realized how controlling I really was and how sometimes it backfired on me. And one of the stories that really happened to me one time is that I had tried everything I knew to get my husband sober. Everything. And finally, I went to my minister. It was so difficult for me to go to him. Because of the secret, you know, we didn't want people in church to know. And he said, "Why don't you try a little reverse psychology?" And he says, "What do you usually do when he comes home?" I said, "Well, you know, I either cry or I scream at him or I throw things at him or I swear or whatever, or I ignore him." And he said, "Well, this time, why don't you go out and buy a new negligee, some expensive perfume, some new makeup, and really, really look wonderful when he comes in, and open the door and kiss him." So I thought, "Oh, God, I'll try it." So I did, and I put on my makeup about 9 o'clock that night, and I kept reapplying makeup and perfume until 3 a.m., and I'm so exhausted. And finally, I hear the car come in, and I could always tell how much he'd had to drink by how long it took him to get from the car to the door. And he was fumbling with the door, trying to open it. And I opened the door, and I said, "Come in, darling, give me a kiss." And he said, "God, I might as well. I'm going to catch hell when I get home anyway."
Not quite sure how to follow that. Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm from Minnesota. I've been in Al-Anon now for 8 months. I'm not sure. I'm going to tell you two stories. Well, actually, three stories, and see if you figure it, this is where I belong. When I was 18, man, I'd done everything I was supposed to, and I kind of figured out I don't do things quite right, or usually. I'd worked hard in school, and so I got really good grades. About 5 weeks from the end of the school year, I was called down to the office by the principal, me and another young man, and we were each informed that, you know, Darwin, you were going to be the valedictorian, prepare the speech, and Paul, you're going to be the salutatorian. So, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, what am I going to say? During that time of year, since we were seniors, we were asked to, in band, we were told to just get out of there. You know, go find something. Go to study hall, go play frisbee, go do whatever. As it turns out, I went and played frisbee on the football field. The superintendent of the schools caught us out there and asked us where we were supposed to be. Now, I was terrified because, of course, I'm supposed to do everything right. You know, I figured I just knew I was going to get expelled. And I hadn't missed anything, never skipped class. I get called down the next day to the office by the principal. And I thought, oh no, my parents are going to find out I'm done for. And he says, "Well, Paul, I have some bad news. You're no longer second, you're third. We recalculated stuff because," and I remember being so relieved that I wasn't getting kicked out of school. I mean, never mind that I went down. The story continues, though, because I knew when I left that year that I was third. The next year I had to send back for my transcripts to switch colleges. I was fourth. So I've never sent another request for transcripts because I know I'll be 120 out of 120. And I got A's. I can't figure that out. That's one story. The second story is a lot shorter. I was getting prepared to propose to my wife. Now, we went out to a Japanese restaurant. It was a very wonderful meal. But during the whole time that I'm doing that, I was so stressed out because I'm trying to figure out when is the perfect time to ask. Is it during the main course? The appetizer? The dessert? The last story I have is I was... last story is I was at my fourth Al-Anon meeting there, and I'm the grandson of an alcoholic, but I remember seeing the other people there and kind of being envious because they were actually living with the alcoholic. I still wasn't doing it right.
My name's Dan, and I'm an Al-Anon from Cocoa Beach, Florida. I don't know if you can hear me or not. I just want to tell a quick story that happened. I was new in the program. It's about 1990 or so. And it's a convention story. We had the state conventions. So my sponsor says, "Well, let's go to this convention." And so we show up at this convention at Fort Myers, Florida. And so I says, "Well, let's do some of the stuff that they do at conventions." And they had... at this convention, they had a boat ride. So we go on this boat, and we're sitting there. And at that time, I had just broken up, you know, and I was feeling abandonment feelings, you know. I was kind of hurting from this breakup. So we're sitting there, and I'm minding my own business, and this Al-Anon is just next to us. And you know how you just strike up these conversations. So we tell where we've been, you know, and everybody tells a little travel story. And I tell mine, I said, well, I went through Albuquerque, New Mexico one time. And by the way, going through Albuquerque, we stopped at this pizza place, and I had the best pizza I've ever had. And so the conversations go on and on, and it takes a funny change at this point. Because this Al-Anon, her name is Peggy, she said, she started to talk about sex. And she started talking about the first time she had sex, and then maybe the second time, some graphic details, and I'm thinking, you know, I like Al-Anon. I think I'll keep coming back. So Frank's kind of looking at me kind of strange, my sponsor. Afterwards, we go out to dinner, and Frank says, Dan, why did you say that? And I look at Frank, and I said, what did I say? You said that you had the best piece you ever had in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
I'm Max, grateful Al-Anon from the home of the Super Bowl winner, Colorado. Go John. One of my favorite ex-husbands was a member of this. Really, it's wonderful. He was a member of the CIA, Catholic, Irish, alcoholic. Towards the end of the marriage, I thought, let's give it one more chance. So when he came home from work one night, I had myself draped in saran wrap, leaning up against the refrigerator. He said, what, leftovers again? That was so mean. Then I thought, okay, I'll try more. So the next night he came home and I said, let's go out tonight and have a real good time. He said, okay, and he left. So I thought, it's safe for me to leave now, and that was, so I did.
Hi, I'm Della. And I'm from Boston, Massachusetts, and originally from Ireland. I'm very grateful. I always had a sense of humor, but when I came into the program, it had gone. And I've spent many wonderful conventions, meetings, and afterwards talking and telling jokes. And just to be restored, it's really great. But just one little story, and then I'm going to tell two jokes, because every Irish person tells a joke. But I was only 5 weeks in the program, and I was asked to be on a commitment meeting. And we went, it was in Weymouth, which is just outside Boston. And being very new and being very nervous, and I was told about church, and there were steps up to it. And I went in, and the group that were there were waiting, and I said, what are they waiting for? And they said, oh, there's a step meeting. And I thought they were going to fix the steps outside the church. There are two jokes. One, this bum goes into a bar, and he says to the bartender, give me your drink. And the bartender says, get out of here. Come on, get out, you bum. And he noticed there were a lot of flies. So he said, give me your drink, and I'll get rid of the flies. Bartender thought that was pretty good. So he gave him a drink, he drank it, and he went to the door, and he said, send them out one by one. And the other one, there's a guy on a desert island. He's been there for 7 years, all on his own. And one day he sees somebody swimming towards him. And this beautiful woman in a wetsuit comes onto the island. And he said, where did you come from? And she said, well, I was scuba diving, and the boat left. So she's talking to him. She said, 7 years, you know, what do you miss the most? And he said, a cigarette. No problem. She takes out a cigarette and she gives it to him. And he's sitting there smoking and thinking, this is heaven. And she said, what else do you miss? And he said, a drink would be nice. No problem. She has a flask. So he's having a drink and a cigarette, and he thought, wow, this is wonderful. And she stands up and she starts to unzip her wetsuit, and he goes, wait a minute, what are you doing? And she goes, 7 years? Don't you want to play around a little? And he says, don't tell me you got a set of golf clubs in there.
That's how to finish on a high. I want to thank all of you that shared. You really made this hour and a half very, very special.